is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Stand by for news. I'm Tom Rowan Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning, we'll hear from some of the folks behind the Wheelhouse Creative Education Center. That's moving from Catskill to Cairo, now to Acre. And Reverend Kim Singletary will talk a little bit about the Crown Act. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service, local Better Weather, and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
Hi, this is Somi, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM, hands-on creative community radio for Greene and Columbia County.
Take two.
The Athens Cultural Center is pleased to host the third Saturday's free film series at the Athens Riverfront Park along the Hudson River. Join us on the third Saturday of each month, May through September, for a stellar movie lineup with notable guests. Screenings begin at sunset, but get there early to enjoy thematic specialty cocktails from the Stewart House's River Grill and settle in with friends on the lawn. Visit athensculturalcenter.org for more information, including this year's featured films. Third Saturday's free film series is made possible by Create Council on the Arts, the Fair Games Arts Grant, and the Stewart House Tavern and River Grill. See you this summer!
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love
Hello
soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marxist of Ghent, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe, Ian Acre, with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, August 3rd. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Michael Ryan reports in the Mountain Eagle that Greene County legislators said at a recent Finance Committee meeting that there is a $1,531,124.80 left over from the construction of a new county jail in Coxsackie. Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin explained, quote, "We had a 5% contingency. We only used 1.9%, which is a credit to the construction manager," unquote. The Greene County Legislature used $8.1 million from their restricted fund balance and will be paying off a $39 million bond for the next 30 years to replace the Catskill Jail. Grodin said, quote, "This was the biggest financial decision this legislature will make in 100 years," unquote. More about this story at Porcupine Soup. Steve Bannon at MSNBC reports that Representative Elise Stefanik's reaction to the news that former President Donald Trump is being indicted on a third matter. This time, Trump is being indicted for his role in the attempted coup on January 6, 2021. But Stefanik, now representing Rensselaer County, did not mention that. Instead, she accused President Joe Biden of trying to, quote, weaponize his corrupt Department of Justice against his leading political opponent, unquote, even though Biden did not have anything to do with the Trump indictment. Last week, after more charges were added to a previous Trump indictment, the New Republic said Stefanik had the, quote, stupidest, unquote, reaction in the classified documents case. Stefanik had said, quote, "Our republic is in peril. Our justice system is broken. The American people understand that Joe Biden and his administration are engulfed in one of the biggest political corruption scandals of all time," unquote. What scandal exactly Stefanik is referencing is unclear, but the legal peril the former president faces is becoming clearer every day. Read more about this story at MSNBC. Now, his wife reports for the Altamont Enterprise that the only health care provider in the Albany County Hilltowns, Hilltown Healthcare, is adding nurse practitioner Savannah Wagner. Clinic founder and nurse practitioner Jill Martin said doubling the medical staff means many more people can get medical service. And Wagner is local, a graduate of Burn Knox Westerloo High School. Martin said, quote, Savannah has practiced as a registered nurse in many areas of medicine, including family medicine, pediatrics, and women's health, and she is thrilled to be taking on a new role as a nurse practitioner in the field of family medicine, unquote. Hilltown Healthcare opened in December of 2019 after community care physicians closed, leaving the area without a healthcare provider. Read more about this story at the Altamont Enterprise. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I know in my heart of hearts that I did my duty under the Constitution, that irrespective of what President Trump has said for the last 2.5 years.
Former Vice President Mike Pence weighed in on the latest federal indictments against former President Donald Trump Wednesday, saying Trump was surrounded by a group of crackpot lawyers who claimed Pence had the right to overturn the 2020 presidential election results. Pence says he was unaware of efforts at the time to secure fake electors in states across the country. Trump is expected in federal court in Washington, D.C. today. A former Republican state attorney general candidate and former Republican state representative from Michigan have been charged in connection with efforts to tamper with voting machines after the 2020 election. Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson tells CNN attempts to tamper with voting machines are efforts to disrupt democracy.
I think we've seen on every level a lot of evidence that this is a nationally coordinated effort.
Prosecutors say people breached election systems in Michigan, Georgia, and Colorado. U.S. Capitol Police say more than 200 officers responded to what they are now calling a bad 911 call of an active shooter in the Hart Senate building Wednesday. No evidence of a shooter was found. Both the House and Senate are currently in recess. For the first time in 15 years, Wisconsin Democrats are celebrating liberal control of the state Supreme Court following the swearing-in of Judge Janet Protasiewicz.
Well, Wisconsin, guess what? We did it! We did it!
Protasiewicz called Republican-drawn legislative maps rigged. A lawsuit asking the court to rule the maps as unconstitutional has already been filed by law firms and voting rights groups. A group of parents and faith leaders in Oklahoma have filed a lawsuit to prevent the state's support of what would be the nation's first religious public charter school. The Reverend Lori Walke of Oklahoma City tells Fox News state funding of the school would be an assault on the separation of church and state.
The school choice movement is really rooted in completely defunding and dismantling our public school system, and that is a threat to us all.
The school was approved by a state charter school board last month, despite the state's Republican attorney general warning it would violate the state's constitution. The federal jury in the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting trial has voted unanimously for the gunman to be sentenced to death. 11 people were killed at the Tree of Life Synagogue in October 2018. And lawmakers say they are shocked following a move by market agency Fitch Ratings to downgrade the United States debt rating despite strong economic indicators. The agency cited erosion of governance for the downgrade as well as the debt ceiling debate. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Eclipsed by Tuesday's news of former President Trump's indictment for his involvement in the attempted overturning of the 2020 election was an arraignment of 2 of 9 of his supporters who allegedly tampered with voting machines in Michigan. The indicted are not ordinary suspects. Attorney Matt DiPerno ran for Michigan Attorney General in 2022, and Dare Rendon is a former state representative who stepped down at the end of 2022. The Michigan Advance reports that DiPerno was arraigned on 4 charges: unauthorized access to official computers, conspiracy to commit undue possession of a voting machine, and undue possession of a voting machine. Rendon was arraigned on conspiracy to commit undue possession of a voting machine and false pretenses. The 9 suspects were investigated for taking 5 Dominion ballot tabulators from 5 Michigan counties to a hotel room outside Detroit in an attempt to prove the former president's claims of voter fraud. Bridge Michigan reports that another suspect, attorney Stephanie Lambert, said in a podcast interview that she expects to be indicted shortly. Attorney General Dana Nessel said in a statement after the indictments, "Every office holder, including local clerks, sheriffs, and legislators, should be expected to uphold and abide the law. More indictments are expected." We have more on the Michigan indictments at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Some developers are building new houses that run only on electricity. No gas lines, period.
That means electric water heating, space heating, cooking appliances, clothes drying, etc.
Dan Bertoldi is with Central Coast Community Energy, a clean energy provider in California. He says going all electric is important for the climate. Newer heat pumps and other all-electric technologies are generally more efficient than those that burn gas, and they can be powered by solar or wind energy as more renewables are added to the grid.
Because you're using electricity instead of fossil fuels, and that electricity is generated from clean and renewable sources, you're reducing greenhouse gas emissions from your home.
So his group provides financial incentives to encourage affordable housing developers to build new all-electric units. Developers can receive $2,500 per unit up to $240,000 per project. He says when developers build new all-electric homes, it's far less likely that those homes will ever run on fossil fuels.
When you build a home that's all-electric, this ensures long-term electrification because there is no going back to fossil fuels, essentially.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, August 3rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 49 degrees in Medusa to 56 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 68 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. And the lucky streak comes to an end. Rain chances return to the area at 1 p.m. Temperatures hit 80 degrees at 4 p.m. Isolated rain continues overnight, and a few bangs of thunder may be heard. We see a low temperature of 63 degrees before Friday shows up, bringing real rain, especially in the afternoon. We get a high of 79. Overnight, rain comes to an end, and we see a low of 61. Saturday will be dry, mostly sunny with a high of 82. Sunday is similar, partly sunny with a high of 81. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:36 a.m., low tide at 11:31 a.m., high tide again at 5:13 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:43 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8 o'clock p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:47 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 355 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty bad. You can try transmissions below 8 megahertz overnight. There are low chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 135, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Chance's girlfriend came across a needle and soon she did the same. At home there are 17-year-old boys and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack and toting a machine gun. off a church and kill everyone inside. You turn on the telly and every other story is telling you somebody died. My sister killed a baby cause she couldn't afford to feed it, and it was sending people to the moon. In September my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June. Neighbors just shine at home. But if a night falls and a bomb falls, will anybody see the dawn? Time.
Baby, 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 you're good you're thinking that you're Austrian man. In line.
Kim, your perpetual optimist. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about today in our hot topics, the Crown Act. Yes, the Crown Act. Do you all know what the Crown Act is? Well, I'm glad you asked. It is a law that was passed a couple of years ago to protect people who have Afrocentric hair, kinky hair, curly hair, hair that stands up, doesn't need to be teased out or sprayed up, it stands up. Black people, people of the African diaspora, are the only people on the planet really that have that kind of genetic makeup. And so a law had to get passed because for years and years and years, decades and generations, There has been some discrimination. There has been some recrimination for those of us who chose to wear braids or dreads or afros. And you know, this thing came to my forefront the other day working on getting a new passport photo, and was told that my hair did not fit in the frame of the picture. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And that I could be disqualified, my picture could be disqualified because I wear my hair in a natural state. I had a headband on, beloveds, and I told them if I didn't have the headband on, it would be even bigger. I want to give snaps and claps to, I guess he's the store manager over at Staples, who really made an effort to help get me some information to help resolve the situation for me and for many, I'm sure. I'm like, I'm not straightening out my hair just so I can get a passport photo. That's crazy. Besides, my hair is protected by the Crown Act. So I wanted to say, if anybody else out there has a fro and you've fallen into the situation, maybe you don't have a fro, maybe your hair is just naturally curly and poofy, and you've had that experience, I want to hear from you. Hit me up on WGXC or Brightside 12534 at Gmail. I want to hear your story. And
all right, I'm Tom Rowe here, and I'm now joined by Alana Novitsky. I didn't ask the pronunciation, so I'm going to have more trouble with Maya Prohovnik.
Close enough, Prohovnik.
Prohovnik, okay. From the Wheelhouse Creative Education Center. Alana, you are the Executive and Community Programs Director, and Maya, you have a son at the school. Is that all
That's
correct?
That's right, yeah.
Or correct me on,
you got it.
On all of that. So tell us what the Catskill Wheelhouse it's Wheelhouse Creative Education Center is.
What is it? So our former name was Catskill Wheelhouse. So
that's why I'm confused.
That's why you're confused. And we are just renaming ourselves the Wheelhouse Center for Creative Education. Wheelhouse Creative Education Center. Still practicing myself. We are a nonprofit educational organization. We offer a variety of different programs. I think we're most well known in the area for early childhood, for preschool and toddler programs. We offer a lot of other things as well, though. We do a summer camp program that we're in the middle of right now. Mm. We do arts enrichment programming on the weekends during school break sessions, and we do after school arts enrichment programming as well. So we do a lot of different things. We just closed on a forever home right down the road from you in Accra, 5599 Route 23. And we're so excited to have this permanent location, because we have a lot of plans and a lot of big ideas that we really want to bring into reality. You know, I think our goal since we started in 2015 in Catskill has been to support families in lots of different ways and to try to create the circumstances that all families need to thrive. And our ability to do that is really going to grow in our new space. So we've got lots of plans and pots on the stove cooking.
I think I saw the school started, you said, in 2015?
That's right.
Like five parents got together and yep. said we need another resource in the area?
That's right. So we were founded by a group of families who all had young kids and who were looking for creative, child-centered programming that would enrich the lives of kids and also to support one another. It was the brainchild of these five folks, all with young kids. I was one of the first people that they hired. I had a toddler myself, so I was starting a school with an 18-month-old, which is not an easy thing to do, I will tell you. I was one of the first hires along with one other teacher, and since then we've grown from, you know, five kids enrolled in our initial class. We now have about 30 kids enrolled in our main preschool and toddler programs, and then we serve about 75 kids a year in our enrichment and summer programs.
And what is the focus of the? I mean, I guess there's different philosophies about very young kids and education. So, sure. what is your guys' philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what really is at the heart of the work that we do with kids is just believing that children are full and complete human beings from the time they come into the world. There's this quote that I really like that I always misattribute, but it's the idea that childhood is not preparation for life. Childhood is life. And so our work with kids is really about kids finding meaning in their own work and learning how to live with one another. So we kind of think about it as trying to create the world that we want to live in, like right here, right now.
I was going to say, you focused on society's worst problems and said you're going to fix it?
Pretty much. Yep. It's, you know, I like banging my head against walls, apparently. You know, I think, but it's also really a really beautiful thing, you know, that every day we show up to work and kids just have amazingly creative ideas that then they need to navigate with other people, negotiate with one another, learn how to self-advocate, learn how to bring their ideas into fruition. And our staff has a really deep knowledge of child development. They know what kids need at different ages and they're able to meet them where they are and then gently guide them to the next level. So we don't, you know, other educational philosophies have a very specific methodology that they follow. So a Montessori program, a Waldorf program, those all have a very specific methodology. The reason that we've chosen our new name, the Wheelhouse Creative Education Center, is that our approach to education, we view it almost as an art form. You know, who are the kids who are presented to us on a day-to-day basis? What do they need? Who are they? What do they love? What are their interests? And how can we bring them together into a community where each individual has a voice and also has the opportunity to take care of one another? So, you know, in some ways it's, you know, can sound a little dreamy and a little pie in the sky. But also I see it work every single day. You know, I see kids learn to listen to one another. I see them learn to communicate their needs. I see them do things that nobody's ever thought of doing before. And all of these skills that kids are learning in their early years in our program are the things that our research indicates that these are the skills that kids need later in life, you know, especially in the world that we're facing that contains problems that humans have never experienced before. You know, having kids who know how to problem solve, how to think creatively, how to overcome obstacles, how to fail and try again. You know, these are all things that research really solidly demonstrates lead to school success, and that also are just immensely useful in pretty much any future that a kid might want.
And I will say, as a parent, so my son's a little over two, and he's been going since January, and he was a pandemic baby, so we really had no idea how he was going to do. And we loved
He hadn't met any humans before.
He'd met some humans, but very few. You know, he hadn't really interacted. He's an only child. He hadn't interacted with other little kids. And so we were like, is he going to be one of those kids shoving people? Like, we had no idea. And he has done, like, he started talking since he started going to the wheelhouse. He can count all of a sudden. He's doing sign language, like, all of these things. And I think what you said is exactly right, where it's like, he'll come home some days, and we're like, I guess you know how to use scissors, like you were ready for that, and we never would have known. So we really, I think, you know, part of the reason why my family has gotten so involved in the Wheelhouse is it's been such an amazing experience for our son and for us just building that community. So it's an organization, like, I agree, like, I think it works. It's such a warm, welcoming place, and I think this new location is really going to be an opportunity for them to do everything they've been wanting to do for years and really be able to serve Greene County at a, you know, in a bigger capacity. So I think it's really exciting.
And did you, how did you find Wheelhouse? Was it a difficult thing or was it easy? I think I go back to the way you guys were founded. We have a child who's high school now, but when she was the super young age we're talking about, we talked with other parents and sort of went in together on with one local teacher.
Yeah.
So What was your story?
I think it was a Google search, probably. And it, you know, it's like when you search, there's not a lot of great options in this area, like throughout the county. And when you search, you know, it's like we're new parents. We have no idea what we're even looking for. We're just like, somebody help us with our kid. And I think we applied to a few different preschools, like some, I think, up to an hour away. Everyone had a wait list because, again, this was like during or like right after sort of things reopened. And so a lot of people were looking to send their kids to school. And so I think we were on the wait list. We applied in the fall, and I think we just got in January. And then we were like, oh my God, we finally did it, you know? But I think it was pretty random. And then we were just so pleasantly surprised. But I think that's why, like, I feel so strongly. I think if more people knew that the Wheelhouse was here and how it works and all the great things it can help with, I think it could really be meaningful to a lot more families in the area than are aware of it today.
And you started with five families. And where were you in Catskill?
So we were located just a little bit past the elementary school up on Ombach Lane, which is now the site of Catskill Montessori. So we were originally there during kind of pandemic reshuffle chaos. We moved to a temporary location in Caro. So we've been operating Caro since 2021. And during that span of time, we've been looking for our permanent home, which is not easy when you're in a record high real estate market and you're a nonprofit organization, but we finally did it. We will be moving to Acra on 8.6 acres with a creek and garden space and lovely classrooms.
That's great. And so when does the move happen?
We are in the midst of gaining all of the approvals that we need from the state in order to operate. We likely will be remaining in our current space in Caro until the end of September and then moving in October to the new space. But we are enrolling families for fall, and because we will have this expanded space, we do have some openings available. You know, the timing is not ideal regarding the transition, but it is what it is, and it's going to be great.
And we're also doing a grand reopening party, so that we do have a date for, and that's going to be August 19th, which is a Saturday, and it's free for everyone. We're inviting families from all over Greene County. We're going to have ice cream and live music and all kinds of fun activities for kids, so that's kind of what we're focused on right now along with the move.
And you have been full up in terms of space for kids until now with the new space?
You mean in terms of our enrollment?
Yeah.
So, yes. So, for the past year, our preschool program was full. Going into next year, you know, whenever you run a preschool, kids turn five. And then they go to elementary school. And because our program currently ends at five, that's why we have spots available.
And I imagine birth rates are fairly level, but the COVID may have thrown things off. And are you getting a bubble of certain age students or not?
Yeah. I mean, there definitely has been, COVID did mean that it was a bit hard to plan because people's lives just were changing so much in that time frame.
Who knows what was going to happen next?
Exactly. It was not an easy time for the field of education or for most people in general. But yeah, so we have had a lot of, you know, families moving to the area, then families moving away from the area, people coming, people going. There has been a lot of flux, and that is what it is.
What's the most difficult thing about putting a school on?
So many.
If you would like me to talk all afternoon about the challenges, I certainly can do that. I think the hardest part of running a school is just how many different types of knowledge you need. So, you know, my background is as an educator, but I have to do marketing. I have to know building code. I have to know what the fire inspector does. I have to know how our vacuum cleaner works. You know, just all of these pieces that go into running a school and coordinating people. You know, in a lot of ways, it is like putting on an event every single day, you know, and to be able to balance the logistical pieces, but always to prioritize love and care and creating a welcoming environment and creating relationships where people feel seen and heard and valued, and that their kids are going to be well taken care of. That's always our priority. And doing that while also being like, oh, and I got to pay the electric bill, and oh, I got, you know, all of the infinite number of tasks that are part of making it happen. But, you know, it's a lot to balance.
So on the flip side, for both of you, what is most rewarding thing that's come out of it? Have you seen anything specific happen with your son from this school? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think his, I'm biased because I think he's the best, but I do think that he has become so, he's so good with other kids. And when we take him to a playground, it's like, I get comments from other parents that are like, he's so good at sharing. He's so patient. He takes turns. And I really, some of that is luck, but some of that I do attribute to the way that they teach and interact with the kids at the school. And we've always talked about, when my husband and I first dropped him off for his first day, you never know how they're going to do. And we're like the ones crying and waiting to see if he's okay. And I just remember like we drove away and we turned back because they were outside in the morning, and we saw like one of the teachers was just like hugging him and handing him like bubbles or something. We were like, he's good. You know, like he looked so happy and already like he felt so comfortable. So I think that has been so amazing for him. And then I think just in general as a parent, really being able to build that community, you know, it's like we're also coming out of a pandemic where a lot changed, and we had a young kid and didn't know a lot of other people who had kids the same age. Now we have friends, we have people who are going through the same thing. And a lot of that really has come from, I like the wheelhouse metaphor, because I'm like, I feel like the school is really the hub of that community. So yeah, I think those are some of the things that have been really special for us.
Is that what the name is about?
I don't know.
I think it's about kind of, this is a place where people can bring their area of expertise, kind of like this is, well, you know, this is where people can come with their, like, this is in my wheelhouse, and it's meant to be that for everybody, you know. Yeah, we really like the second part of our name also. Yeah, and I think I would say the most rewarding part for me, I just love seeing our kids take care of one another. And I do think that that is something that we really cultivate. You know, just watching out the window today, a kid fell down on the playground and just, you know, scraped her knee. But there was like six kids that just like ran over and were all taking care of her, you know. And I just, like, that's what I want to make in the world. You know, I want to make a world where people take care of one another and work to make the world better for one another.
We also, I don't know if you mentioned the sliding scale, because I think that also is something that I think is so special about it, that they do tuition on a sliding scale basis going, I think, all the way to zero.
Zero, we start at zero.
And so I think that's a really amazing part of their mission to make sure that they can serve all kinds of families from throughout Greene County.
And I guess it's important that the kids get to hang out with all kinds of different kids.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely, yeah.
What is the new space going to really do for the center?
Well, I mean, I think one of the big challenges that we've faced over the past few years is just that there was a degree of instability that was inherent in being in a temporary space. So, you know, families wanted to join us, but they don't know if we're going to be within commute range for, you know, for that, for them, if we have to move. So having a permanent space is going to do wonders for just that stability piece. It also means that we can build up our infrastructure in ways that we haven't in the past. So we have a grant to build a food producing garden with a greenhouse. So, you know, that's something you can't do in a temporary space. I mean, you can, we got some tomatoes in pots, but it'll allow us to really develop that infrastructure. You know, we do a lot of outdoor education as a really important piece of our program. So getting to know the forest that we're on and to know the geography, to know that land really well, and to teach kids to be able to be good stewards of that is something that, it's really hard to do that if you might have to move. You know, you can develop a connection, but it's not the same. So having our own space is just going to allow us to go deeper in the work that we've been doing. And I think to become even more of a hub. You know, like here we are right in the middle of the county. We got all kinds of programs for all kinds of folks. you know, whatever you need, call us up. We'll see what we can do.
And another neighbor that's perfect for what you were talking about with the forest is the Agroforestry
the
Center.
Cooperative
and Cornell Cooperative is right down the road.
Absolutely. Yep. I am about to email her. I'm looking for an inn to petrified forest. We want to take our kids. They're really into the fossils.
I'm sure everyone wants to see the petrified forest. The Carroll Library and Historical Society did something a couple weeks ago, and it was jam-packed. Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
What else do you want people to know about the Wheelhouse Creative Education Center?
I'd love for people to know a little bit more about our long-term vision. You know, we really have this dream of creating the circumstances that all families in Greene County need to thrive. And that's a big project. Obviously, we're not going to accomplish that overnight, but we have done little pieces of it. We worked with the summer rec program in Catskill when it was run by the community center. We built a children's garden in Elliott Park where they did the programming there. We know that gardening is a really enriching and meaningful experience for kids and adults. So those little pieces of, you know, what do people need and how can we build that together? That's where we want to go. We think about things like, we're really excited about this idea we've been playing with of a family center, which would include a toy library, a clothing closet, a space where you can have a drop-in playgroup for kids and their parents can go in the other room and drink tea without their children climbing on them, you know? So we really are envisioning, you know, our preschool and toddler program is at the heart of what we do, and we love it. And we also see creative ways that our community can better work to mutually support one another. You know, another idea that we've been discussing a lot and that we're working towards in the fall is creating networks of peer support for families who are in some particularly challenging situation, whether that's navigating the special education system, navigating family court, these different systems that people find themselves involved with that are super challenging to navigate, especially on top of your day-to-day life. Just a little bit of information or just somebody to watch your kids sometimes would make a world of difference. And so I want people to know that that's what we're working on. And we're not going to be able to do that by ourselves. You know, it's going to be it's going to have to be a community effort. So I just want people to know that we're out there and we're going to do lots of stuff.
How about you, Maya? What do you want as a parent people to know about?
I think very similarly, I think that parenthood can be very isolating, especially when it's your first kid, especially when they're still young.
And when there's a pandemic.
Yes, that does not help, certainly. But I think even outside of a pandemic, it's difficult. But I think what I would love is just for, like, you know, we're in a pretty sprawling area. And I think that for me, it was just such a relief to know that there was this community out there. And so I think whether it's for preschool or whether it's for these other programs, and they do a ton of amazing programming, I just want parents in the area to know that this resource exists and that there's all of these other amazing things that are on the horizon. I'm just so excited for that to exist here and for people to be able to rely on that kind of help.
All right, before we go, tell us again about this August 19th event. Is it an open house? Is that a
open house, grand reopening, free ice cream,
it's a way for, if parents are interested in the school, this is a perfect opportunity to come out.
It's a community event. It's open to everybody. So it's open to folks who are interested in the school. It's open to folks who just want to learn more about us.
Anyone with a kid who wants something to do on a Saturday.
It's really open house, open door, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And we have, so there's free ice cream, free entry. There are a couple things we're doing to raise money for the Wheelhouse, and all the proceeds are going to go directly to the Wheelhouse and all of these great programs that Alana was talking about.
And it's at the new location?
Yes.
Which is, again?
5599 Route 23, right at the corner of John Holtzman Road.
In Accra.
And what time is the event on August 19th?
2 to 5.
2 to 5 on August 19th.
Mm-hmm. And we have, it's Catskill Wheelhouse on social media.
That was my next question.
CatskillWheelhouse.org is the website. We still have the old name on the domain, but for now, until the event, we'll keep it as is so people can find it.
All right. Well, thank you, Alana Novitsky and Maya Prohovnik.
Yes.
Got better or
close
worse?
Enough. Thank you so much for having
Thank
us.
Thank you for coming out today to WGXC and for doing all that great community work.
For our Peace Bucket, we are joined by Hyg Hovinas, who is the co-chair of the Green Party Peace Action Committee of the United States. And they, among many groups, are observing the anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Hiroshima, unfortunately, was August 6, 1945. They're doing a webinar on August 9th at 8 p.m. But we thought we'd ask Hyg to talk about, you know, why is Hiroshima still so relevant almost a half a century later?
Well, Mark, I think it's relevant because an important lesson has not been learned. The physicists and engineers who developed the bomb, once the Trinity test had succeeded, realized that they had changed the course of history, that large-scale warfare would not be tolerable. It would be too dangerous. The scale of destruction would eclipse even the horrors of World War II. And they urged the American government to immediately begin diplomatic negotiations to make sure that nuclear weapons would be controlled and that some form of international government would guarantee peace worldwide. But that message was ignored, and the U.S. still flush with success from its triumph in World War II, decided to use the unique access to nuclear weapons to further strengthen its position in the world. And this has led us to a current very dangerous situation.
Now, much of the world, you know, have, you know, signed on to a nuclear, I believe, non-proliferation treaty. But the United States has not. In fact, starting under President Obama, the United States is spending an enormous amount of money to upgrade, update their nuclear weapons. You know, what are, you know, realistic avenues that Americans can take at this point to get the federal government to, disarm and get rid of its nuclear weapons?
Well, I think it's really got to come from the grassroots, because U.S. Congress, unfortunately, is firmly in the hands of powerful corporate interests, and the defense sector is a significant part of the corporate world. But there's also a military establishment, and there's also a national security establishment, and there is a culture of confrontation and militarized posturing in the United States that is very hard to change from the top down. I think the Green Party and progressive wings of the other parties will have to be the avenue through which that happens, from the grassroots up.
So there is this webinar that the Green Party Peace Action Committee is holding on August 9th. What are going to be some of the key points raised during that event?
Well, we'll start just by depicting the horrors of the nuclear strikes, and also some background on the extensive firebombing campaign that preceded it. Many people don't realize the extent of the devastation leading up to the Hiroshima and Nagasaki attacks. Then we'll also talk about how there have been numerous crises in the intervening years where the world has come to the brink of nuclear war. And there are also attempts to restrain the nuclear arms race. But unfortunately, in the last couple of decades, all but one of these arms control agreements has been abrogated or discarded, mostly by the United States. So we're in a rather dangerous interval now where there are fewer restraints and all nations are arming themselves further and seeking access to nuclear technology. Lately, Saudi Arabia has been making noises indicating they want to develop nuclear potential, notionally for civilian use, but it's a dual-purpose technology. So we're going to try to take people through the progression from Nagasaki on to the present day and alert people to the increasing danger. The Union of Concerned Scientists maintain what they call a doomsday clock, and how much time there is to midnight, which is a catastrophic nuclear war. And it's now at 90 seconds to midnight, which is the closest it's ever been in the 20 years or so that they've made that prediction.
I should mention locally that the Bethlehem's Neighbors for Peace is doing their weekly vigil on Mondays at Four Corners in Del Mar, I believe at 5 p.m. And the one on Monday, August 7th, will be focused on Hiroshima anniversary. Now, you know, right now, one of the big movies in the, you know, the world actually is Oppenheimer, which is about the one of the scientists, I guess, who led the creation of the nuclear weapons. That seems sort of a odd movie to be coming out at this point.
Well, it's relevant, and I wish the film would be a stronger anti-war message than it is. It really has a rather narrow focus on the rise and fall of Oppenheimer, who was kind of a Dr. Faustus character. He got his wish, which is to spearhead a fantastic project requiring collaborative effort of the best minds in the physics community and a huge engineering effort with unlimited funding. And it was successful. But then the remorse of understanding the consequences hit him. And at that point, he lost interest in further advancing nuclear weapons technology, and he got embroiled in political opposition that accused him of delaying the development of the H-bomb, and it ultimately led to him being stripped of his security clearance. But the fate of Oppenheimer as a man is an exciting story, but the film neglects the terrible suffering of the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it also neglects the suffering of from radioactive poisoning of the people who were downwind from the tests. To this day, there are activists called downwinders who are asking for government compensation for long-term harm, largely cancer morbidity resulting from their being exposed. No one really knew the extent of the harm caused by fallout at the time of the Trinity tests or even the Hiroshima and Nagasaki attacks. It was only a year or two later that lethal effect of fallout became well understood. So none of that is covered in the movie, and I think it's a lost opportunity in terms of alerting people to the current danger.
So we probably have about 90 seconds left. The threat of nuclear war has certainly been increased by the present war, you know, taking place in Ukraine. You know, what should the world be doing at this point to step back from nuclear war?
Well, unfortunately, it's largely up to the U.S., and we have a very stubborn, recalcitrant administration